from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. More than 100 University of California faculty and staff engaged in sexual misconduct between 2013 and 2016. That's according to records UC provided Tuesday to KQED and other media outlets. The cases, which span UC's 10 campuses, involve a range of behaviors from inappropriate comments to stalking and groping, and UC released the information as it moves to strengthen its sexual violence and harassment policies following scrutiny surrounding several high-profile cases, which we discussed here on the Forum program. In this segment, we want to discuss the prevalence of sexual misconduct on UC campuses and how the administration is addressing the problems. And our own Scott Schaefer joins us here in studio, senior editor now for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, who has done, as I said to him before he stepped up to the microphone, yeoman work on all this. Welcome, Scott.
Morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And good morning also to Kathleen Salvati, who is UC System-Wide Title IX Coordinator, a new position relatively, University of California Office of President Napolitano. We welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin with some background from Scott about what actually was released here. We're just talking about numbers here a little bit off the air. We go from January 2013 to April 2016 across all the campuses. UCSF has the most incidents at 26, followed by UCLA. And Kathleen Salvati has that in her pedigree. She comes from UCLA, 25. Let's talk about what else really this revealed.
Well, first we should say that, yes, UCSF did have the most cases in these 113 cases that were released this week. But UC Berkeley released its own documents about a year ago, and those were some of the cases that made the news. So this is a wide range of
Can we also say that these were heavily redacted, by the way?
Yes, and that's a whole issue we can talk about, the issue of privacy. In, I think, every case, the complainant, the person making the accusation, whether it was staff or students, those names are redacted for privacy reasons. These are cases where there was a positive finding after a university investigation, findings that the accused had violated the university's policies on sexual harassment, sexual violence. It's a wide range of behavior and a wide range of people. These are not all deans or faculty. We've got custodians and cafeteria workers and co-workers and nurses and physicians, really all across the spectrum of the kinds of positions. It's really a window into the kinds of behavior that can happen on the campuses. And really, let's face it, these things happen in many, many workplaces, in public and private institutions across
the country. In fact, one wonders if these numbers are so high when they're compared to other, say, corporations or businesses that have as many employees or, you know, on case-to-case basis.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you see when they sent us these documents, pointed out, look, we have 250,000 employees. These are 113 cases where there was a positive finding. So what we don't know is how many cases involve students making an accusation against another student. We don't know how many complaints were where there was not a positive finding. We don't have those numbers. But clearly, the university is taking steps to indicate that it's taking these kinds of complaints more seriously. And in fact, Kathleen Salvati was hired by University President Napolitano as a system-wide Title IX coordinator to make sure that there are policies that are fair, consistent across the 10 campuses.
And we're going to talk to Kathleen Salvati in just a moment, but I wanted to also mention that 7% of these were sexual assaults that include touching and intimate body parts, touching and things of that sort. But there's, like you say, a whole wide range of stalking and groping and so forth. Is there also a double standard, though, for, let's say, tenured professors and those in administrative roles, deans and so forth? This has been the argument that we've been hearing, as opposed to those in the ranks of, you mentioned, custodians or others who are just university employees?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to say. We're still going through these documents to make those correlations and those that analysis. But, you know, like I said, well, two-thirds of the people involved, the accused, no longer work for the university. Flip side, of course, a third of them still do. And the range of jobs that they held was very wide, and the punishment really what you did see in these documents is cases where there were many warnings given, there were apologies that were required, there were trainings that they were required to take. So in some cases, there was a pattern of behavior before there was a real disciplinary action like termination, and that wasn't only for faculty or deans. I mean, it did go across the kinds of jobs that these people held.
And again, Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Kathleen Salvati is UC System-wide Title IX Coordinator with the UC Office of President Napolitano. And Title IX, actually signed by Richard Nixon, was all about women in sports. And now it's Scott's done some, like I said, really good chronology here for us. I hope that we can put that on our website, taking us back to really the evolution of Title IX. And it continues to evolve. I mean, what are we doing, Kathleen Salvati, and what's in the works here, and what's going to move ahead in terms of system-wide? I mean, there's been talk about peer review and policy updates and, you know, tougher policies, period.
Right. I think since President Napolitano came to the UC, she's made this a real priority. So I would say for the last 3 or 4 years, this is something she's been very focused on, trying to strengthen, you know, the university's response system-wide. What we're trying to do is have, you know, a consistent and strong prevention and response program. And I know that sounds very simple when I say it. It's not as simple when you're trying to implement it on 10 campuses system-wide.
And each campus has its own challenges, I'm sure, so that becomes even more of a kind of challenge where this is concerned. But there's a lot of concern about false charges, about proper discipline, about whether or not to bring in the police. I mean, there are a lot of pieces to this whole puzzle in terms of making things fulfill what Janet Napolitano wants them to fulfill.
Right. I mean, with respect to the police, we always encourage anyone to report to the police, and we always inform everyone that they have that right to report to the police. That is a separate process from the university's Title IX administrative process. And, you know, we do not believe that the police, you know, alleviate the university's obligation to take care of its students and employees.
Well, the university, it's been pointed out many times, has to be more transparent in this, and also probably for those who are culpable, more punitive.
I agree with you on the transparency. I think that's a real goal, is to establish, you know, strong processes that we can explain to both people who come in with complaints and people who are complained against. We really want the process to be strong and credible and well understood, because to your point, that's required before we can take strong disciplinary action.
And by the way, there are links to KQED's story about the newly released documents and the Title IX timeline on our website, kqed.org/forum, and you can access those. And you can also join us in this conversation. We're talking, obviously, about new reported material that has been made available, thanks to KQED and other media outlets, about incidents of sexual misconduct by UC employees between 2013 and 2016, and some of the changes that have gone into effect and that are going into effect and being looked at. You may want to bring in your own thoughts here, and we welcome your calls and your emails, and you can join us now by phone at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so please feel free to participate. Again, that toll-free number is 866-733-6786. And if you have questions or comments, you can also join the conversation by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But certainly, we welcome your thoughts and any questions or comments you might have. And Kathleen Salvati, let me also go to the core of this, which often is brought up in any discussion and has been brought up in many discussions we've had. How do you change the culture?
Yes, that is the question. I think as an initial matter, and this certainly isn't the only answer, right, is we do need to establish fair and strong processes. So in terms of how we respond, we have to get that settled. So we have to have strong, consistent process that when we respond to these complaints. I think that's really important. That really is only the first step. So then the question is, how do we change the thinking on this? You know, I always go back to the language of Title IX, which really was about equal access and participation in education and employment at universities. And I think the more that we think about sexual harassment and sexual violence as something that's preventing that equal access, I hope the more we'll understand how damaging this is.
We're getting some questions and comments here right away, as could be expected. In fact, Scott Schaefer, Diane says, what percentage of offenders were male? 100%? And why is this not outrageous?
Well, we don't know the answer to that. There are some females who I know there were a couple or one or two down at UC San Diego, for example, who were accused and were disciplined. Kathleen Salvati might be able to speak more to that, but these documents don't explicitly say, what the gender of the respondent was, but I think you would have to say that the vast majority were men. Yes, definitely. And it wasn't all, male on female. I mean, there were a few cases of female and male as well.
Well, let me go back a little to your experience at UCLA for a moment, Kathleen Salvati, before we bring our listeners into this. There was a case of a professor who was charged. There was no admission of wrongdoing. It was a major case. I mean, it got a lot of certainly media coverage and so forth. But he went back to the classroom, and there's still, ongoing vestigial outrage about that.
Yes, and that was a case that came up several years ago, and I do think the process and procedures are pretty different now.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are we at a point now where that wouldn't have continued to be the case?
I can't say whether or not he would not be in the classroom. What I could say is that I do believe that if the allegations were brought forward at this time, there would be a different process for determining how to respond. So there would be a much more formalized investigation. The complainant would be informed as to what was done. They would have sort of equal rights through the process. Those are the really important additions that I think the president has made sure we're implementing.
I would add, Michael, that in some cases where the employee was terminated, particularly higher ranking ones, like there was a physician at UC Davis, for example, who is no longer there, but we looked and that person is still working in the Bay Area at another hospital. I'm not going to name his name. One would hope that lessons were learned and the behavior has stopped. But, life goes on for these people. They may leave the university, but they go on and, in many cases work somewhere else.
Let's bring our callers and listeners into this. And we go first to a caller in Belmont. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's Sarah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question for your panel. It's specifically about whether the UCs or anybody else has tried to estimate the number of people who may not have reported, or the percentage of people who did not report sexual harassment. And specifically, I say this because I'm one of those people. I work in tech. I'm a manager here in the Bay Area. I did my PhD and a postdoc at UCLA, and my advisor there basically started pursuing me, and I experienced sexual harassment because of that. And I had to make the decision of whether or not to go to the officials and bring a case. And I talked to the ombuds office at UCLA. And eventually I decided that it's very disturbing for me to continue being in that situation, and I did not pursue that.
You did not pursue it because there were too many hurdles and too many impediments, and you thought you didn't want to get in that process, in other words, yeah?
Well, it was mainly the emotional, and so it's basically you don't want to go through that process from scratch, and you don't want to get, get questioned. Based on that claim, because you start attracting, whether you're making this up or not.
Yeah, I understand. Scott, one.
Yeah, I think the caller makes a great point of the insidiousness of these kinds of things, because you're in some ways damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you do come forward, you potentially put yourself into a situation where you're going to have to confront the people, in some cases their coworkers or faculty or people you're in a class with.
I hate to say it. Look at all the women who came forward with Donald Trump.
Exactly. And then you also, if you do nothing, then you're sort of left to suffer in silence. You still have to attend class or go to work with people, whatever the situation might be. One of the things the university has done is to create at each of the campuses a confidential advisor who is removed from the sort of immediate administration in the area where these folks are working, so that they can go and get advice about what is involved in making a complaint, what to expect, what their options are. And the hope is that this will be sort of a safe place for accusers or potential accusers to go to decide what do they want to do. Do they want to pursue this or not? And is there something, you know, short of making a formal complaint that might make a difference?
Well, are the policies changing, Kathleen Salvati, in that way that it'll be easier or more safe for people to come forward?
Yes, I think that Sarah's description of what she experienced is precisely what we are trying to address. I mean, Scott mentions the confidential care advocate. That's really important. I think the procedures, we are trying to strengthen those. We've tried to make it. It is not an easy process. That will always be the case. It would not be an easy process to come forward with the complaint. But as Scott said, it's also not easy to live with it. So we have built in procedures where we try to minimize the burden on the complainant when they come in, the care advocate, that confidential advisor, the way the investigation is structured, their rights in the process. All of those are really important. The prohibition on retaliation, which I know is a significant concern for someone who would have been in Sarah's position, we're working hard to ensure people know that retaliation is prohibited under the policy, that they have the right to report it, and that we would respond to that.
I wonder how you would. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Please.
Sorry.
No, go
ahead.
Well,
we do try to track, one of the things the president has implemented is a requirement that most employees on the campus inform the Title IX office, with the exception of those designated as confidential resources, such as our advocates. Other employees have an obligation to report to the Title IX office when they learn of a student who is experiencing sexual harassment. So that is very helpful for us to know, okay, these people are reporting that it's happening, and yet they're not coming in necessarily and engaging our process.
Well, you'll be glad to hear a listener tweeted just nanoseconds ago, the efforts of the UC administration to fix sexual harassment are awesome, the first step, and should be applauded. There's a question from a listener named David that I'd like you to address, if you could, Kathleen Salvati. He says, it seems inherently unworkable for UC to do its own internal investigation. How can a university conduct a quality investigation when they don't have subpoena powers and do not record witness statements or take formal depositions?
So we have trained investigators, I want to be clear. All of our investigators who are investigating these cases are specially trained, and this is all they do. So I want to note that we don't have subpoena power. We do administrative investigations, which, to your point, to Scott's point, most employers do. I think that it's really important, as I said before, there are law enforcement and criminal processes. We encourage people to use them. That does not alleviate our obligation to keep our students and employees safe.
Scott Schaefer.
One thing you get as reading through these documents, Michael, you do get a sense of the thoroughness of at least these investigations, or many of them. In some cases, 10, 20 people are interviewed in each case, including the person who's accused. And you get a window as you read these reports and the statements of the people interviewed, you get a sense, a 360 sense of how these kinds of incidents are viewed by everyone involved, people who witnessed it as coworkers, the person, of course, making the complaint. Sometimes you get the sense that there's a sense that you don't want to come forward because you don't want to make a big deal of it. Or the accused will say, well, everyone does this. You know, and you get a real indication of how what the culture is in that particular workplace and the attitudes toward whatever the behavior might be. And it really varies. But oftentimes you do get a sense that people just feel like, well, I mean, as some of these folks said, no one can take a joke anymore. Well, that's clearly not the world we're living in anymore.
Makes you also realize how much we need to change the culture again. But let me go back to another caller, and that's you, Nathan. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I graduated Berkeley in 2007 in a sociology major with an emphasis in gender. I understand calling in as a male on a subject of sexual harassment might be a little dicey, but I wanted to, one, point out, I think it's to your caller's comment on Twitter, I applaud the UC system's aggressive investigations like this. I've been in private industry for 10 years, and I can tell you many employers would not go after similar complaints with the aggression that I think the UC does. And I want to make sure that we're also very careful when we begin to publish these stories in the media with these heavily redacted reports and knowing so little. And again, I do applaud your efforts by, you know, saying that we may not know all of the really material details in these things. But I think it is important to take 25,000 employees in 113 events. That's 0.004%. And I think any industry, again, encounters these issues on a day-to-day basis. But I think
just go to Silicon Valley and look at the records there. I mean, yeah, seriously, no, in terms of numbers, yeah.
Absolutely. And I wanted to, one, applaud the UC system. I want to be careful as these stories get published, we need to be, you know, and I think Forum's doing a terrific job today of making it very clear this is not a system plagued with sexual predators, but a system that's maybe really leading the charge as to how to deal with these things. And appreciate the program.
Okay. Thank you, Nathan. Scott Schaefer.
Yeah, I would just add that if you're one of these folks who were caught in a situation where you were sexually harassed or assaulted, you know, the numbers don't matter to you because it makes such a huge difference to you personally. And you do get a sense of the power dynamics, too, in reading through these reports. You know, if you're a resident at a hospital, and many of these cases, by the way, happened at medical facilities, whether it was UCSF or UC Davis, UC San Diego, UCLA, you know, we're going to be looking into that more in the coming days. At what, you know, is there something about this a medical setting? You know, you have, for example, we saw reading through one of the cases, some of the residents said, well, you know, we're supposed to be tough. We're supposed to be able to take this kind of language, this kind of sort of sexual talk, and because you have to kind of prove your toughness in these settings. And obviously, that's not the kind of culture that the university or any employer wants to support.
As a listener, let me go to you on this, if I may, Kathleen Salvati, named Merrill, who says, and I brought up the police before, and she brings up a question here that I'd like you to address. She says, sexual assault is a crime. Why are universities allowed to deal with complaints without contacting police?
Well, we do contact police. We work very closely with police. I mean, at the direction of the president, every campus has a case management team, which includes our UCPD police officers, and we consult on every case together. Now, we don't necessarily share names because it is a, you know, victim or complainant's right to choose where they report and how they report. That's the case with other crimes as well.
And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me bring in Sam next. Sam, thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you. You know, I just wanted to question of, you know, we're talking about the symptom and not the cause. And, you know, we're talking about humans are sexual. That's always going to be the case. And maybe we're not doing enough education on, you know, sexual awareness early enough, not in a lewd way, but just you know, to address these things, because in every environment, school, work, wherever, you're going to have people who are sexually attracted to one another or not. And I think we need to address it earlier than later. Rather than talking about all the police cases, why don't we talk about the fact that we're not educating enough?
Well, sex ed is a big topic. We've taken it up on a number of forum programs. I thank you for your thoughts and appreciate your call. I want to go on to some more listener expressions of concern or questions that are being raised. Here's Gene, who simply writes, I was a student at UC Berkeley between 61 and 65, and I worked at UCSF for 3 years. On several occasions, I was sexually harassed by my professors and supervisors, but in those days, there was no recourse, and I suffered in silence. I'm glad to see things have changed since then. Here's Marcia, who raises an interesting question. She says, sexual harassment law is very clear on the federal and state levels. Why isn't this being pursued by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission? Kathleen Salvati?
Well, people also have the right to file complaints there, and they sometimes do.
They're not mutually exclusive, in other words, right? Yeah. Okay, another caller we go to, and it's a caller in Milpitas. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. I went to UCLA, and my roommate was in medical school there, and she did a rotation in the emergency room, and it was notorious at UCLA that Thursday nights, Friday nights, and Saturday nights were the nights the frats would have parties, and she would come home those nights and tell us, you wouldn't believe how many rape kits I had to do on girls that came in either drunk or they were maybe drugged, I don't know, but she's like, they were not themselves. And I'm concerned that that data is not being included. This data, I'm glad that they've come out with it, but this is in the cases that they have had a clear indication of issues. But what about these issues?
Miriam, thanks for raising that question. Kathleen Salvati, can I go to you on this?
Yes. I mean, this release of records was about faculty and staff, but certainly the president's focus and all of our focuses have been also on student sexual violence. So we've made a host of changes in that area.
Listeners asking where they can access these documents. Scott, can you help here?
We're putting some of them online, not all of them. We're going through them to highlight some that are, you know, particularly egregious or particularly interesting or illustrate a point or another. And so if you do go to kqed.org, you will be able to see some of those as we put them up.
And there's a link to the KQED story about the newly released documents and the Title IX timeline that's on our website, again, kqed.org/forum. Let's talk just a little bit of time left here, Scott, about that timeline, because I complimented you on the good job you did on sort of clarifying, and you brought us all the way up to the present here. But it does go back to Nixon, but there were some big moments here. Focus on Occidental College.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to put all of this into some context. I mean, Occidental College, a private university down in Los Angeles, had, cases of sexual harassment, sexual assault that students there felt were not being taken seriously. And that resulted in a big upheaval down there in the administration. I'm not sure the exact year. I think it was around 2014. Down at Stanford, we had the Brock Turner case of the student who was accused of assault, rape, who got what was perceived by many to be extremely light punishment, I think 6 months, and probation. And so all of these things are happening in the context. Now, those, of course, are private universities. But then here at in the Bay Area, we had the case of the law school dean at Berkeley, the rather well-known astronomy professor, a couple of coaches. So all these things are happening as Janet Napolitano becomes president. And she, by the way, I did not know this until recently, she was an attorney for Anita Hill, who, of course, accused Clarence Thomas. So this is an issue of particular, I think, importance, personal importance to her. And she's been implementing these changes. Obviously, there's a long way to go in terms of changing the culture and rooting out this kind of behavior and making sure it's a fair and consistent process. But I think you could certainly say there's progress being made.
Well, thank heavens for that. And we'll continue, of course, to follow this. And again, we invite you to go to our website to read more, kqed.org/forum. Thank you, Scott.
Always thank you.
Good to have you twice in 1 week, in fact. Kathleen Salvati, thank you for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Kathleen Salvati again is UC System-wide Title IX Coordinator for the UC Office of the President. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Gucci, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Jeremy Siegel. Engineer is Danny Bringer, engagement producer Amanda Sue Pye, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. We thank you for listening, and for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.